From Georgia Public Broadcasting, this is On Second Thought. I'm Virginia Prescott. That's the indelible voice of Sam Cooke with A Change Is Gonna Come. It was released the year after Dr. Martin Luther King Jr.'s speech at the 1963 March in Washington for Jobs and Freedom. Popularly known as the I Have a Dream speech, Dr. King's words there have become cemented in history as a crucial message during the civil rights movement. U.S. Representative John Lewis was there and remembered it at a 2017 event at the Truman Library Institute. We'll play that.
But I think on that day, August 28, 1963, he was deeply inspired and moved. He had the ability or the capacity to turn the marble steps of the Lincoln Memorial into a modern-day pulpit. Yeah. And he preached. He really did. That was an unbelievable message to America and to the world. So when you travel across and around America, around the world, people know I have a dream.
They do.
A dream deeply rooted in the American dream. And we're still trying to fulfill that dream.
The National Center for Civil and Human Rights is commemorating what would have been Dr. King's 90th birthday this year with a new permanent installation, a new exhibit of drafts and notes from some of Dr. King's most enduring speeches and sermons. Nicole Moore is manager of education and museum content for the center. She was part of the team that worked to curate this special exhibit, and it's called The Meaning of Hope, the best of the Morehouse College Martin Luther King Jr. collection. Nicole, welcome back.
Thank you.
Nice to see you. This exhibit, The Meaning of Hope, highlights not just the speeches themselves, mm-hmm. but the notes, the drafts. What does this collection reveal about Dr. King's thought process?
For me, the thing that it reveals the most is that he took his time. He had multiple drafts. He had people review his work. And it was the thoughtfulness that he put into it because he knew that his words had power and they had meaning. And you want to make sure that the correct message got across and what he really wanted to say to the people. And so when you're looking at these drafts and you see the scratches and you're like, oh, okay, he's really working through this. You see the care that he had.
This is a man who seems larger than life, yeah. I think, in memory. Towering historical figure. But to see his handwriting in this exhibit, the mm-hmm. papers that he touched, rough drafts, as mm-hmm. you said, the imperfect lines mm-hmm. that didn't make it into the grand speeches. Does it humanize him in some way?
Oh, absolutely. To me, that is the most humanizing aspect of it. And it's not even the drafts. One of the things that we're going to show is the letter from Birmingham Jail. And it was the one that was published in the Christian Century. And it's already published. It's out there. But the document that people will see, it actually has him self-editing. Mm. Like, the letter's published. Your point has been made.
We can see it on Google. We can find it anywhere.
But he had gone back and he's like, you know what? I should have said this. Or he's scratching everything out. And so you see that constant self-editing, that constant improving. And to me, that is one of the most humanizing aspects. It's not, this is good enough. It's, I can always be better.
Mm. His writing mm-hmm. of and drafts are also in a recently redesigned permanent installation. The center has completely redesigned its first floor. And this permanent installation is called Fragments. It mm-hmm. leads visitors into this Morehouse collection of papers. It's a metal structure. Polisher and Abbott Miller designed it. How would you describe it?
I would describe it as going to be a wall of words. And it's beautiful. And what you're looking at, it's these pieces of metal that have Dr. King, various words. So you'll see hope, peace, his signature a couple of times, but really just kind of these strong words out of his various sermons and speeches. And his handwriting is beautiful to me. And when you see it and when it's magnified, it'll have light coming through. It's kind of the sense of calm when you see it. It's just like, yeah, okay, hope. I have that. Peace. That's going to come through. Yes. And what it hopes to do is it really just kind of hopes to explain not just his writing style and who he is, but also how we got, you know, how the collection came back to Atlanta.
Hmm.
What does Dr. King mean to the city of Atlanta and why his words are so important?
How did it come back to Atlanta?
So the papers were at Sotheby's Auction House. A couple of city leaders and a couple of folks came to then Mayor Franklin and said, look, I think Andrew Young was definitely a part of that conversation. It was like, hey, these papers are for sale. And if they disperse through private hands, we're going to lose this incredible legacy. And so these leaders got together with Mayor Franklin and they raised the money to buy the papers off of auction before they were already laid out. People were visiting them at Sotheby's and they managed to secure the papers and bring them back to Atlanta. They are now at Morehouse College. They're housed at the Woodruff Library there. And the center is where we rotate various sermons, speeches, letters, just pieces of that 13,000-piece collection.
That's Nicole Moore. She's Manager of Education and Museum Content for the National Center for Civil and Human Rights. And we're learning about a new exhibit from the center showcasing the best of Morehouse College's Martin Luther King Jr. collections. Well, Nicole, you just told us how this collection came back to Atlanta. And the exhibit features the best of this Morehouse College collection. You mentioned the letter from the Birmingham jail. What else is in there? I see notes on normalcy, never again. That is the speech that became I Have a Dream.
Yes, and we have the draft of it. So it's 5 pages of this draft. And a lot of people only remember I Have a Dream, which was the end. It's that moment where King flips his notes over and he's like, you know what? I got this.
So that was unscripted.
It was unscripted, but it wasn't the first time that he had said, I had a dream. He had been going around to different churches and different places and kind of pieced that together in some of those sermons and those speeches. But this is the first time that you're hearing it on such a large platform.
Mm-hmm.
And it's life changing. But normalcy, the beginning of the speech is extremely powerful itself. And so people will see that beginning draft. And then we have a pamphlet that basically breaks down what everybody knows is I Have a Dream.
And using bits of his sermons was characteristic in speeches. In fact, we have the drum major instinct. This mm-hmm. is from King's final sermon at the Ebenezer Baptist Church. Give us a little bit of the groundwork for this.
So the drum major instinct is, to me, one of his most powerful sermons because it embodies who he was. And he's basically saying that everybody wants to be in charge. Everybody wants to be known, but it's not about you.
Mm.
And when you harness the drum major instinct and when you realize that it's bigger than yourself, then things really take place. And he was warning us against having that drum major, I need to be in front and I need to be in the spotlight. It was basically kind of a very subtle, humble yourself and realize that this isn't just about you. It's a larger picture.
That seems so prescient, given that mm-hmm. he was assassinated at the Lorraine Motel in Memphis, April 4th, 1968, mm-hmm. after that sermon. How do scholars look at it? Do they see a sign of, okay, I am one man, and I don't know, given what happened afterwards, some sort of foretelling?
I think so. I mean, he spoke a lot about how he didn't think he would live to see 40. And unfortunately, he was right. But he kind of knew, somehow he just knew that, you know, I'm not long for this world. But while I'm here, I want to create an impact and I want to do the most that I can to help people, not just African-Americans, but people in general. And so it's just really powerful when you're looking at drum major and when scholars are examining drum major coupled with I've been to the mountaintop. It really is just kind of laying everything out. And in drum major was so powerful that was played at his funeral. And he essentially eulogizes himself in Ebenezer.
Wow. Well, there are also correspondences mm-hmm. with leaders, Thurgood Marshall, President John F. Kennedy. What do we see in these kind of letters?
So the Kennedy ones,
You're very excited about
this. I'm jumping around in my chair. Because he had, first of all, he had the ear of presidents, not just President Kennedy, but there's letters to Eisenhower. In the collection, there's letters to Johnson. But these Kennedy telegrams where President John F. Kennedy is like, Dr. King, I need you to come to this meeting. And then King's like, absolutely, yes, I'm there. And then shortly after, he's like, actually, I kind of got something else I can't get out of. And so to me, that was so amazing because it said, first of all, he told a president, actually, I got to go somewhere else. So what could have been more pressing than this meeting with the president? Yeah. But it also shows that he honored commitments. He wasn't, whatever the other engagement was, he wasn't going to blow that off because the president called him. He said, maybe we can get together later and discuss these things. And it showed how committed he was, that he wasn't just going to dismiss something just because a president was there. And that dedication and that commitment, that's important because sometimes you want to feel like, oh, I'll just run to this something that most people would say is bigger and more important. But what's more important than serving the people?
Mm. Any big surprises for you or new as you worked and went through these papers to curate this exhibit?
Since I've done the rotation a few times, it's not much that surprises me anymore, but looking at his trial sermon at Dexter and realizing that that trial sermon is basically what makes him the pastor at Dexter. Mm-hmm. And realizing that that's where it began. Dexter and being in Montgomery is really where he becomes kind of ingrained in civil rights, particularly with the bus boycott, with the Montgomery Improvement Association. All of that happens because he's not the bus boycott and the movement there, but his involvement happens because he's the pastor at Dexter. And so to see that trial sermon and then to read his acceptance speech, which we also have in the exhibit, to me, it's a groundbreaking document because that led to so many other things that we now cherish and revere about him.
Mm-hmm. Last year marked 50 years since the assassination of Dr. King. He was only 39 years mm-hmm. old, which is stunning to think of. Yet there is this vast anthology of speeches and photos and footage of Dr. King. So how is the Center for Civil and Human Rights hoping that you can expand and improve curation and learning and understanding of Dr. King?
We've recently launched the National Content Advisory Committee, and this is a group of King scholars, including Dr. Claiborne Carson. We have Dr. Vicki Crawford, who's the director of the Morehouse College Martin Luther King Jr. Collection, and a host of others. And these scholars are indelved in the work of King. They know his work inside and out, as well as the civil rights movement. And with the help of these scholars, we'll be able to really broaden how we look at King so that we are further enriching people's experience and their knowledge base on Dr. King through this exhibit.
You are then enriching, deepening our mm-hmm. vision of Dr. King. But I'm thinking of what Representative John Lewis said, we are still trying to fill Dr. King's dreams. What do you think of Dr. King's vision? What do you think he would see as he looks out in the world at this moment? Where are we in that dream?
I think he would still have hope. And I think that is the one thing to really remember and understand. The work is never done. He understood that. Congressman Lewis understands that. And he would still have hope that we are going to get there. And that as progress happens, that's just a mile marker on the way to freedom. But it's never ending, and we can't rest. We just have to keep going.
Nicole Moore, she's Manager of Education and Museum Content for the National Center for Civil and Human Rights. The new exhibition, The Meaning of Hope, the Best of the Morehouse College Martin Luther King Jr. Collection, opened this past weekend. There are a number of other events, including a redesign and a new permanent installation to mark what would have been the 90th birthday of Dr. King. And we are going to leave you with Nina Simone's I Wish I Knew How It Would Feel to Be Free, which became a civil rights anthem. And we're continuing our celebration of the Dr. King holiday with an interview with Zernona Clayton. That's after the break when On Second Thought continues.
I wish I knew how it would feel.